This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Heldman. Good afternoon. On today's program, David Hoogie. He's the president of the Aspen Science Center, along with Maya Hunt. She's the newly hired education coordinator at the Aspen Science Center, whose mission is to advance the public understanding of science through lifelong discovery, exploration, and education. Last time we spoke, which is going on 9 months ago or so, you were in the Crystal Palace.
Yes, we were. It was a new adventure for us. Mark Hunt was very generous to give us the space for 3 months. We were open 17 days, I think, and we had over 1,500 visitors, including 500 kids from a dozen field trips. So it was an incredibly successful event, a series of events, and it was a way to get people excited about science. We still get people. I just had an email yesterday from somebody saying, are you going to open again in the Crystal Palace? And we won't be in the Crystal Palace, but we are hoping to get a space maybe down in Willits or somewhere further down valley to do a similar concept next year in for the down valley residents. So we're excited about that.
And you've got Maya Hunt here today. She's the education coordinator. That's a new position for you at the Aspen Science Center.
So we are very excited to have Maya on board. Maya comes to us with a terrific background. She has a degree in physics and astronomy from Pitt, and then she went to Rhode Island where she designed and implemented STEM education programs for different ages, including AP physics and chemistry and science. And for high school students, she's worked with young kids at science camps, including children with autism, and is a theater minor. And so she has a sort of unique combination of hardcore physics background with teaching and curricula design experience, and she's a theater major. So
that's a really good combination.
She's a perfect fit for designing programs to teach kids about science. And there have been a lot of changes at the Science Center in the last year. Some of them are visible. We've rebranded, and new logo, new website, but many of them are behind the scenes. We've done our normal events that we do in the course of the year, our street fair and our physics cafes and our physics barbecues and our day camp programs and high school intern programs and other programs we have throughout the year, we've done as normal. But behind the scenes, we've hired Maya. We've hired Keith Berglund as our new operations manager. He used to run the Aspen Youth Center, so he has a wealth of experience in running after-school programs for kids, which is an area we want to expand like we did with the Crystal Palace. And he also has a science background in biology and taught biology and science and math at the Aspen Country Day School and the Vail Mountain School before he was at the Aspen Youth Center. So he also has a unique combination of nonprofit leadership management and teaching experience and running after-school programs for kids. And so he's also sort of uniquely qualified to do what we need to be done at the Science Center.
Maya, did you get plucked to move across the country for this job, or were you here, and how did that happen?
I did move here for the position, and this is Maya. I did move here for the position, and the route here was not from Rhode Island. It's a little bit more complicated. Mm. So, quick story: I went to University of Pittsburgh for the physics and astronomy degree, and then my teaching certificate in physics is from Rhode Island. And I also taught in California, and that's where I worked with kids at the science camp. And then I actually moved here from Denver, where I had started a physics PhD program. And I was looking into getting back into the technical research side. And I was in this quandary where I didn't know for sure whether I wanted to pursue the research or go back to the education, which I had just developed more of a passion for over time. And that's when I found this.
You'd started a PhD program?
Yes.
Ah, where? Which school?
At University of Denver.
Okay. And here you are.
Yes. Now I'm up here. And part of the idea for hiring this new position was to build a more like deep and connected, cohesive approach to education. And that's really what I'm excited about. I think a lot of times, especially one-off science events, can be a little bit more superficial and not really connect people with the deeper science concepts. And that's what I really wanted to do, and that's what they were looking for with this position. And so I'm really excited to be part of that.
Yeah, it's really a good fit all the way around. And I would describe what the Science Center's been doing for the last several years as more events. And some of them are series of events, like the cafes or the barbecues. But they're not, there's no I would distinguish that from a program where we would see the same kids week in and week out with a curriculum that extends over time and builds on itself as opposed to discrete activities. And we really want to get into more of the, we're going to keep doing the events. Those are great. They're fun to get people excited about science. It's a great way to introduce people. But then we also want to create programs to support kids and children, youth in the Valley in particular, but not just youth. We also want to have programs for adults, but we have to start somewhere. And so we decided we're going to start young and we're going to launch a preschool program, which Maya is developing. And she'll talk a lot more about it, but we did some research to figure out what preschool programs are out there to teach STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math, to teach that to kids who are 2, 3, 4 years old.
Are there any?
And there aren't many.
Not surprised.
There are, you can buy, you know, children's books and games and toys that are science-based to help teach science. And there are professional development courses for preschool educators to go to learn about how to teach science. But there's no comprehensive course that provides the materials you need, the training for the teachers, ongoing training support, and that integrates science into existing curricula. So a lot of preschools are focused on teaching, as you would expect, math and language skills. And we want to add into that this notion of the scientific process and an understanding that science is not just a series of scientific facts about objects and laws and formulas, but is a process and a way of thinking where you see something, you make an observation and you have questions about why that happens, and then you come up with a hypothesis why you think that might be true and design experiments and try those experiments to test out your hypothesis and repeat and modify until you learn. And we think that that process, we know that that process is extremely valuable in science, and we think it applies to all areas of life, such as thinking about, election decisions or other areas of your life, finances, where just having a good understanding and a good critical way of thinking is increasingly important.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Heldman. My guests are David Hoogie, he's the president of the Aspen Science Center, and Maya Hunt, the new education coordinator at the Aspen Science Center. They've just introduced a new program, preschool, introducing science to preschool kids, and we're going to talk about that in a minute.
So we found that there aren't really a lot of integrated programs out there for teaching STEM subjects in preschools. You can get books and science toys and games for kids to work with in the classroom, and there are professional development courses that educators can go to learn about how to teach science. But what we want to do is go into the classroom, lead some of the science ourselves, with Maya being an expert in this area, and then train the teachers to learn how to deliver science, not just as a discrete unit, but as something that's integrated into everything that they do. So as the kids are learning language and kids are learning math, they're also thinking scientifically about, what am I seeing? What am I observing? Why is this happening this way? What can I do to test this hypothesis and draw some conclusions, and then use their language skills to share those conclusions with kids and really integrate science into everything that they're doing throughout the curricula so that it becomes a natural part of what they do, just like language, just like math.
Give me some examples of how that works, how you apply that in preschool and up.
The really exciting part about this program is that when you're 4 years old, you are learning by exploring your environment and you're checking things out, you're finding patterns and, you know, maybe asking a friend and making sure these things make sense and acquiring knowledge that way. And if you change the wording slightly, I basically just described what the scientific process is. So actually, science is a really natural fit for preschool classes. And teachers are trained to educate children of that age in that way. So actually, preschool teachers are very well trained to teach science to that age group. And we want to capitalize on that. So one thing that I have seen that's really common in classes is for kids to be playing with blocks or something. And a lot of the day in a preschool class is made up of what we call free play. So it's not unstructured, random play, but it's guided discovery, basically. And it's capitalizing on student interest, and they have a lot of choices, but it's really productive learning at that age. And so that's what the majority of their day consists of. and they'll be like, students will be playing with blocks and trying to balance things. And I've seen teachers go over and add some guidance to this process and say, like, well, how high do you think we can stack this? Or do you think this tower will still balance if you put something on one side? And then the kids are, you know, learning things about gravity. And it's a really small modification that would turn this into a great science lesson. And so that's what this program aims to do, is like open up this science that already exists in the classroom and make it accessible and make teachers realize how good they are already at teaching this science, so that it's easy to have these connections throughout throughout the entire day and classroom.
Is this up and down the valley?
Yes, we are going to be working with a handful of schools to pilot it this winter in the next month, testing different components of it from Rifle up through Aspen.
How do you, my understanding at least, we have one former teacher on our staff right now, Elizabeth Stewart Severy, is our environment reporter. And we now have some insight into the goings-on at schools, which you probably have more than I do even. But what I understand is that the days are so packed, and that the idea that, you know, hey, we've got this great idea, and no matter how great the idea is, the teachers are like, okay, but where do I fit that in? And yet you're asking me to do something else. I already have so few minutes of the day that are unaccounted for. How do you find a path forward through that?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And that's part of the reason why we're starting with preschool. I mean, part of our philosophy is let's get the kids when they're young. We know that, you know, up through age 5, the brain goes through a period of plasticity where it's developing and creating new concepts and forming sort of values and standards and ways of thinking. And so it's a good opportunity to get this, kids are natural scientists at that age, to get sort of reinforce that learning and guide it in a structured way. So our intent with this program, to address your question, is to make it very organically developed. So we're working very closely with the teachers. Maya's spending time in the classrooms observing how they work and talking to them about what they do already and how we can be supportive in creating science. So we really want to make this a grassroots effort that's being developed in conjunction with the school so that it's useful. And I think part of the reason why preschool is attractive is because it's not as structured. It's a lot more free play. And so we can get in there and there's more latitude to incorporate it in what they're already doing. We want to have programs that support education up through high school, but I think they'll take different forms. And probably we won't be in the classrooms doing things, but we'll be doing things outside of school to augment what kids are learning in the classroom. So for example, you can imagine in high school you're taking biology at Basalt High School, and you've got an exam coming up next week. The Aspen Science Center, I'd like to see have somebody who's qualified in biology run a review session the week before the test. Just like if you were in college, you're taking a course, you go to your TA the week before the test, and he does a review. This is all the stuff you need to know that's going to be on the test. Let's review it. We can help support the teacher by being in sync with the curricula. We can say, okay, if you're taking this test next week, come to this review session. We'll walk you through what the core principles are that you should learn, and that way support science. We should have a rank of Aspen Science Center approved tutors that understand STEM subjects, that if your child needs a tutor at any age, you can come to us and we can provide you with a tutor. So there are different ways that we can support different grades where we don't have to be in the classroom necessarily, but we can enhance scientific learning.
Are the schools entirely receptive to this?
Well, specifically with the preschool program, that is a question that I was looking for the answer for from day one. I know that perspective as a former teacher. I know what it's like to have lots of really great resources thrown at you and just sit there like, I don't have time for any more resources.
Right.
I need to use the ones that I already have. And so that's a perspective that I was very conscious of and was deliberately looking to see how to implement this with that under consideration. And as David said, part of the answer is to design this in a way that fits into the classroom, so to involve it into free play so it's not another outside activity that's a burden, and to provide a lot of options for both teachers and students so that they can use it in a way that best fits their classroom. So we'll have sort of a baseline with a larger standard activity that we can model and then kind of let teachers use it while supporting them in a way that best fits the classroom that they're in and their students, because the really hardcore learning that's going to happen is going to come from the teacher because they're there every day. I have heard that both kids and teachers really like it when guests come in and it's exciting, and so that is an aspect that we're going to provide. But to really reach that deeper level, we need to equip the individual classroom to capitalize on these things. And that kind of adaptability is how we're going to do that. And so I think because we've been so conscious of it, at least with these preschool programs, we've had a lot of positive feedback and they seem receptive to this idea.
And the other thing is that there are standards for teaching STEM in science curricula, and they are, you know, pretty well baked in at the state level, and there are national next generation standards that Maya can talk about coming for elementary through high school and even into kindergarten. The standards for preschool are being developed, in some cases are developed, but aren't necessarily being rigidly enforced and evaluated yet. And so, but it's coming. And so what we're doing is going to help these teachers get prepared for what's coming. And a piece of this is teacher training. We want to develop an accredited training course for the teachers where they can take our course, and it's co-taught by perhaps CMC, where they would get continuing education credit that they are certified to teach science having taken this course, and they have this program in place. So then that's something they can offer to the parents of their students to say, look, we're a great preschool, and we don't just teach math and language arts, but we also teach science. And so it gives them a leg up with state evaluators and meeting those curricula and fulfilling their continuing education requirements, and it also makes them more attractive as preschools. So we feel like this is a way to help them be more successful as schools in addition to teaching science.
You're bringing enhancements to the curricula at preschool and up. You're bringing lessons, you might be bringing materials and whatever other supplies are necessary. Do you ask for reimbursement from the schools for that? How does it work? Is there an exchange of funds there, or is that what you do at the nonprofit that you provide?
That's a big part of what we do at the nonprofit. Okay. And we have several generous funders who have pledged 3-year support
for these programs,
for this program specifically, okay, to help get it off the ground. It's not fully funded. We still need support. So we'd ask everyone to
give
to end of year donation. And Colorado Gives is next Tuesday, December 6th. And there's a partial matching fund from First Bank. So give during that day. We get a little bit extra. But we have some generous donors who have seen how important this is, who are helping to support this. And you know, we will work out down the road what level of support the schools are able to provide. I think there's a lot of opportunity for grants the schools can apply to get some money for this kind of thing that will help support us. We want to make this affordable for any school that wants to do it, and we need to figure out the details of that. But, my goal as the president would be to not have economics prevent a school from being able to teach science.
Are there other nonprofits around the country that are doing this type of outreach to schools?
There are similar programs around the country, and there is a push toward enhancing preschool education right now in general. It seems like there's more of an understanding of how important development at that age is and how widespread the effects are when you can reach children at that age. Through quite a bit of research, we haven't seen anything that has all of these key pieces and is quite as integrated of an approach. And we haven't seen anything that is as tailored as we're trying to make it for the Valley. So we have all of these pieces. We have the outside program that we are delivering, but this continued support for the teachers and continued support for the teachers in addition to maybe a 2-day summer workshop. We also want to provide support throughout the year and have it be tiered for whatever the needs of the classroom are. For example, I talked about how I'll have a baseline activity that we'll do and then have further options that teachers can implement. Some teachers may be more comfortable with science and ready to take that and run with it, but if they're not, we want to be there for all of the little steps as well until the teachers are comfortable with these subjects. And that sort of deep approach paired with, you know, all aspects of the program and a real focus on making teachers' lives easier, that's not something that we've seen anywhere.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Heldman. My guests are Maya Hunt. She's the education coordinator for the Aspen Science Center. David Hooge is the president of the Aspen Science Center. They've introduced a new preschool outreach program to kids up and down the valley to teach physics and other science lessons to preschool age kids. Earlier, when you were discussing, Maya, your move from PhD work to this this job that you've recently taken with the Aspen Science Center, you said that you were hoping to introduce deep thinking about science to kids. Is there an age when, and can you give me an example of when you, a concept that inspires deep thinking in a kid about physics or science?
I don't know about a specific individual concept, but the approach that I have, which I think is what you're asking, is to focus on the process of science. And I think that's where the inspiration occurs. I think a number of people, I don't know how many, but a lot of people don't have an understanding of science as a process. It's more facts about chemistry, or you can do this experiment and find some sort of answer to it, but the deep process of science that begins with a question and then coming up with an actual test that you can do to answer that question, and how fundamental the answer is that you can get when you design a real science experiment, and or even not what one would typically think of as an experiment, but just a test that you do throughout your life, and then you figure out the answer to that. It's not something that someone has to tell you. It's something that you discovered about the world. And I think that is where science becomes really inspiring.
Yeah, I'll give you an example from the Crystal Palace when we were there last year. We had a water table where kids could make boats out of popsicle sticks and construction paper and various doodads and hot glue guns. And they would build a boat and they would put it in the water table, which had a current flowing, and it would fall over. And so they'd say, oh, well, that didn't work. So I've got to add a little bit over on this side to balance it out. So they go back to the table and add a little bit, and it would, okay, that's better, but now it fell forward. So they would have to repeat an experiment to get the boat to stay up. That's an example of the kind of things kids do all the time. And we just want to say, hey, what you're doing
that's
there
science.
Is science. And when you ask the typical four-year-old to draw a picture of a scientist, you get a picture of a white guy in a lab coat with glasses holding a beaker. And it seems foreign and distant and something that they can't achieve, perhaps. And we want to encourage them to understand that I am a scientist and I am exploring my world, and just provide, you know, at age 3 or 4, obviously you're not going to have deep philosophical conversations about the nature of science, but they can start to appreciate that what they're doing is science and see that in a positive way and start to think about the world that way. We can ingrain that early.
Yeah, and validating that process instead of just some kind of answer, and validating how important it is to go through those steps, and that is what science is.
And I think Maya was talking about people not understanding science in general, and I think people think, you know, science is a set of facts about physics or chemistry or biology or whatever. And as I said before, science is a process. You come up with an idea and you try to disprove it. And that, I think, is a critical point that people don't really understand, that science can't absolutely prove that anything is factually true. What science can do is disprove things. So you come up with an idea, and it's true until it's disproven. So Newton came up with the ideas of the laws of motion way back when the apple supposedly hit him on the head. And that worked for hundreds of years and explained everything that we observed, until Einstein came along and said, well, what if you were going really, really fast near the speed of light? How would that change things? And he was able to, through just incredible genius, think what that would mean and connect the ideas that there's, you know, the time and space are connected and energy and mass are connected, which introduced a revolutionary way of thinking. And it wasn't that Newton was wrong. He was correct for the observations that he had. But once we had new observations or new thoughts, we realized we had to modify. So we had to modify what he said by adding the relativity. And Richard Feynman, who's a Nobel physicist, said, you know, something along the lines of, we scientists are in the business of proving ourselves wrong as quickly as possible because that's the only way that we learn. And I think that's disconcerting for the average person, because they want things to be cut and dried. They want things to be true or false. And they say, well, science says this, so it's true. And then a year later, scientists come back and say, well, we found some new data, so that wasn't quite true. We have to change our mind. And then people say, well, see, science doesn't know what it's doing because they said this thing and now they're changing their mind. But that is the fundamental nature of science that the people need to understand so that science doesn't get discredited as a way of thinking, because it's incredibly important, not just for things like, you know, technical things like physics and math, but for economics and medicine and all the way we think, and all the many of the advancements of humankind have been because of this scientific process.
And threats like perhaps climate change.
And threats like climate change, you know, or, you know, what do we do with evolution? Is evolution, which is real and has been credible evidence supporting it, but that runs into conflicts in some areas of society. You know, you have things where stem cell research, where that was very controversial decades ago. And there was just an article I was reading yesterday about a man who lost was paralyzed from the neck down, and they injected stem cells. And in 3 weeks, he's able to move his arms and
regenerating.
Regenerating nerve cells. In 3 weeks, he was able to lift his arms and lift weights. He's not cured, but it's incredible strides. And it's the kind of thing where we need to not be afraid of a society to say, well, we're using embryonic stem cells, that makes me uncomfortable. Okay, we need to respect that and make sure we understand what's happening, but we can't let the negative aura that can hang around that dissuade us from making real advancements in science. And so there's a tension there, and we need to be respectful of everybody's views, but we also need to recognize that science is a method of discovery, as Maya said, and you don't always know what you're going to learn when you do the experiment. And that's where the really interesting stuff comes, is when you learn something you weren't expecting. That's the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. That's when the physicists get excited, when the scientists get excited. You know, they found the Higgs boson, which completed the standard model of quantum mechanics, and that was really validating because it validated this huge theory that's been around for decades. It would have been more interesting if they hadn't found it, because then we would have had to start over.
What do you have coming up in January, next Tuesday, Giving Tuesday, and then something else in January?
Yep. So we have Colorado Gives Day on Tuesday, December 6th. We'd love everybody to support us. And we've had thousands of people come to our events. And if you like what we do and want to see us continue this kind of thing, including our preschool program and other education programs for different ages, including adults, we'd love your support. And then our physics cafes, which we do in conjunction with the Aspen Center for Physics, start up again in the winter. The first one is January 4th, Wednesday at the Wheeler. And there are two or three every month in January, February, and March. And you can check out the Wheeler or our website or the Center for Physics website for those dates. And we'd love to see you there Wednesdays at 4:30.
David Hoogy is the president of the Aspen Science Center. He's joined by Maya Hunt. She's the education coordinator at the Aspen Science Center. Welcome to your new position. And thank you both for making the time today. And happy holidays.
Thank you.
Great to be with you, Carolyn. Thank you.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. If you missed the show or would like to hear it again, go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Have a great afternoon.